Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave, so much. Oh, my goodness. Here it is. I can't believe this. It's July 19th. How is this possible? Could somebody please explain to me how this is possible? Here we are. And normally I wouldn't start the show off with the music if there was a guest scheduled during the first hour, but that's okay. This might be a little tricky, a little challenging this day. Our guest had been Everett Harp, and I'm hoping he's still coming aboard. As of a couple of hours ago, he thanked me for the reminder. But in the meantime, Everett and I both found out that our friend George Duke had a big tragedy. Corinne, George's wife, passed away, in case you did not hear. So many of us are reeling, and we are worried and prayerful for George Duke at this time, because George thought that he had lost her a time or two before in the past several years, but I am not sure if this was sudden or this was expected. Doesn't matter if it was expected. When it does finally come, it's still a big, big shock. She was everything to George. She handled the business from soup to nuts. She was his right arm. So I'm just going to dive into music here at this point, because I'm not sure where Everett's head is at. And I perfectly understand if he wants to chill. So we'll just see. We're going to play some music from Everett Harp's First Love CD. And you know what? I think it might be appropriate to play Going Through Changes. How about that? On Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
sakes alive, good buddy. If that is not the best way to start a show, you tell me a better way. Holy cow. Just listening to that is like aloe for wounds. No joke. The amazing sax man who has been through a couple of changes himself is on the line with me. And Everett Hart, I am telling you this with every fiber of my being. First of all, that is an astounding piece of work. The whole First Love CD is, and I've never met a question more when I ask you right now, how are you?
Well, I'm blushing right now. I'm feeling pretty good.
Oh, well, listen, I'm not done with you because I've already referred to you as the most handsome man in the universe. So,
all right, someone's paying you really well, but I only hope they continue to do so.
No, look, I wish they were paying me. But that is the truth, and I really mean it. I've been diving into First Love and your other work. My God, since 1992, Everett, isn't that amazing when you hear yourself right now on that piece? It's such a thoughtful song. How do you feel when you hear yourself now in 2012?
That's a tough question. You want me to romanticize it for you or want the truth?
Oh, look, I always want the truth from you, always.
It's always difficult for me as an artist or player to hear myself, only because I always hear, I missed it by that much, you know. There are times when I can listen and say, you know what, yeah, that pretty much grasped what I was trying to say. But I, you know, when I'm being hypercritical, which is generally most of the time, I always think, if I just had a chance to do it again. But for the most part, I'm very happy with that track, especially. It's really poignant.
Oh, gosh. And where was your head at that time when you were in that studio doing that song? What were you thinking of? Were you thinking of the title of the song? Because a lot of people can relate to that, going through changes.
You know, I would have to think back when the title came or when what the song actually made me feel. And I have to believe that what the song made me feel resulted in the name of the, in naming it thusly, going through changes. In this case, the egg did come before the chicken.
How about
but,
that?
Yeah, it basically represents a time in my life. You know, I lost my father 5 years ago, and
yes,
it's an ongoing transition. You know, you think so. This was maybe 3 years after my father passed, and it was sometimes when we experience a loss of that magnitude, we actually try to nullify that loss, or nullify the pain by just putting it in the back of our minds at times. It begins to be relegated back there for a large majority of the time just to protect our emotions at the present. But I think when I'm making a record, when I'm writing, when I'm recording, that's when my emotions are no longer protected. They're out there.
Oh, yeah.
There's no wall. There's no wall at that point. I'm just open. And then when I'm done doing that, then I can go ahead and build that wall back up and, you know, and protect my emotions or my sensitivities. But during a time when I'm at my most creative, that's when I'm most, open to feeling.
And Everett, how wild is it? You know, God has his way of putting people and circumstances together and stories to tie in. Here you are. I remember I saw many a snippet of conversation or what you had been feeling by way of an article about you and feeling the loss of your dad. And here we are today, discussing a song that was on First Love, And we can't discuss the project without discussing George Duke. And now George has lost his beloved wife. So I'm really glad that if you were to have an interview today, it's me. Because I know that you and George have been really close. And I love George Duke with all my heart. He's one of my favorite people in the world and has spent time on the show. So I just had to say something because people have to know how much he needs prayer this day.
He does, as, you know, with just about anybody in a situation like this. George is a very strong man.
Yeah.
And he'll, you know, like most of us men, will, you know, put up a good face. But even in this case, it's very difficult. And, you know, she had been suffering for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, along with the relief that she's no longer suffering, there's overwhelming grief that he's lost his life partner. And,
yep.
That I just can't imagine. So, yeah, he definitely needs a lot of our prayers. It certainly couldn't hurt. He's a great guy, and she was a wonderful, wonderful woman, like a big sister or a favorite aunt to me.
Really?
Yeah. So...
I'm happy to hear you say that because I'm seeing so many wonderful posts on Facebook about treasured memories of George and his wife together. So that's really good to hear. I love to see that people who truly care rally around folks who are so important to the universe. And I know that happened to you when your dad passed. And Do you understand how much love is in your corner? Do you realize that people out of the blue, when they heard that you were going to be on this show, said, "Oh my God, what's happening with him? Oh, I can't wait to tune in. I don't know what's happening with him. He's going to fill us in." So there's a lot of folks who are listening today.
Well, it's funny because I hear that. I do hear that a bit, and I know. It's interesting. I kept recording. I have 10 records. I've kept recording over the years, but some things changed, the whole thing was just very interesting. My career, how it took off, and it would not have happened had it not been for George and Corrine, his wife. But things kind of happened real fast, and I think somewhere along the way, my original intent in playing music got clouded. And while I absolutely enjoyed being an artist and being able to put my music out and have people, you know, tell me how they feel about it, if they enjoy it, that's wonderful. There was a side of the business that was presented to me that basically said, "This is who you are and this is all you can be." And I said, that wasn't my intent. And if I had known that because I was making a record or I was becoming a solo artist, that this is all that I was allowed to be, I never would have done this. At the beginning of the day, I'm a musician. I like to play with other people. I like to express myself. I've always played different kinds of music. I don't mind playing backup with a singer. Now, it is limited as to what I will do these days. I mean, you know, you probably won't see me at just any Holiday Inn. But, you know, it can happen. I just like to play music when I play. I mean, it became such a job that some of the joy was extrapolated out of it. And
I see,
So I started, and then there was my family. I was losing a lot of time with my daughter traveling so much. So I started staying home a lot more. And I think that eventually turned into, well, where's Everett? You know, like, where's Waldo? Where's Everett? And I got really comfortable with that. I'd go out and I'd play dates on the West Coast, but I rarely came back east after a while. It was like maybe once every 2 years I come back east. or 3 years, and in some cases, like D.C., it was several years. And, you know, I could be very comfortable and stay close to home on the West Coast and make a very good living and put out the records and do that. But I also decided to start venturing out, as this record represents, venturing out and playing a bit more aggressive music. While I absolutely appreciate smooth jazz and I believe it has a place, at one point it was so limiting as to the scope of what you could do that I just could not consciously put myself in the category.
I thought you were going to say that you could not breathe, because I completely understand where your thought process is going here.
Yeah. I mean, basically, when you know, George has expressed this a lot. When you have the cart telling the horse, or pulling the horse, rather, and in that, using that metaphor, the cart is telling the horse where the, you know, taking the horse in a certain direction, then there's a problem. And,
right.
And for the longest period of time, we had people that were consulting radio that dictated to us what we could sound like on our records. And
oh, I know.
It was really, really, it was baffling. I understand business. I have a business degree, and I do understand business. I understand what they were doing, but I could not get with what they were doing to the music in that regard. And it just took a lot of the joy out of it. So I did kind of disappear and just did my thing. I put out my records. I do dates where I felt I wanted to do them, and where people wanted to see me, I would go. If they were too long and expensive, maybe I would not go. I'd rather stay home with my family. And it got like that. I did get selfish for a while, but now I did spend a lot of time in Europe over the last 5 years, Europe and Southeast Asia in the last 5 years.
Yes.
And that's been really great building my audience over there. I mean, there's a wonderful audience overseas that, and the system over there as far as music goes, they're not, there's no constraints. They just love good artists. They love.
That's right.
And I'm not talking about good artists, like people that get on stage and dance and run around and take their shirts off like I used to do. I'm talking about people that really dig in and play the music. And what my original intent as an artist was to grow as a player and become a better player. And that got sidetracked. And this is what I love about going overseas. They are open and accepting to that, much more so, unfortunately, than the United States is allowed to. And the United States would be more allowed to if the media system that presents the music would allow it. So
that's right.
Thank God for stations like you guys and the Internet, which you know, opens the door for a lot of different sounds, a lot of different people to be heard. So things are changing, and I decided about a year and a half ago, after hearing from a lot of people, where are you, what happened to you, what are you doing, we don't know what you're doing, I called my agent, I said, get me back into these markets, and, you know, I owe it to the people that have supported me, and
wow.
I want to get back out and start playing, and I said, I don't care what it costs me, get me back into the market.
Blues Alley is going to be so grateful that you're going to be there tonight, because...
Well, I hope some people show up. I hope I haven't been away that long.
Oh, no, Everett. Don't you worry about that. Your bass is so strong. And look, the folks that have listened to you through the years and have seen you go through your musical changes and have loved everything, every direction that you've turned, and I'm so grateful for George Duke and you getting together, because I love the idea that he gets you. I mean, here you are from a gospel base. You're entrenched in gospel music. You're hearing Texas soul when you're growing up. You're on that saxophone. You hear jazz in high school. All of that is in your head. And he and you seem to have a connection where it's a torch. You're picking it up and you're running with it. So, I mean, I just love First Love so much, because I'm hearing straight ahead Everett. I'm hearing contemporary, funky, fused, old-fashioned, newfangled, all of that, Everett Harp.
you got it. I'm basically a rainbow of all of it. I mean, that's basically what I tried to exemplify in the earlier records. You know, just everything that I wanted to do, a cornucopia of just everything out there,
yeah,
you know, that I liked, I tried to infuse in the music. And, you know, when the market became singularly focused, where it wanted to basically, pursue basically the smooth jazz aspect, then they didn't know where to place me. Understandably so. Our country is very a category based, and they didn't know where to put me. So it began to be a struggle for radio. And I just said, well, you know, guys, you figure it out, but I'm still going to keep doing what I do. I don't know what else to do. And, you know, the wonderful thing about this First Love record, which is about 2.5 years old now.
Yeah.
The wonderful thing about it is that George told me after he produced my first record, he said, you know what? You have it from here on out. He told me, he said, I don't need to produce a record on you. You can produce these.
Fabulous.
And he was there as a sounding board, as my mentor, and eventually became one of my best friends. And then, you know, eventually he said, you know what, man? I don't want to ever produce another smooth jazz or contemporary record on you. He said smooth jazz. He said, I don't ever want to do any kind of record like that. But if you ever decide to do a straight-ahead record, that's the one I want to do.
Woohoo!
And he told me this about 6 or 7 years ago. And the funny thing was, when it was time for me to do another record, the record company called me up, and they said, look, it's time for another record. And the first thing out of my mouth was going to be, I can't do a smooth jazz record if that's what you're wanting me to do right now. I can't. My head's in another place. I'd almost rather have you let me go than for me to do that record, which is what most of the companies are really wanting to, you know, they needed to sustain themselves and they needed to stay within that system. And that's business. I understand it. But this guy, Danny Wise, over at Sonicky Records, the first thing out of his mouth, he said, Everett, we need another record. But, man, I want you to do something different. I want you to do a playing record, a record where you're just playing, something live, you know. And it was almost as if God just said, this is it. This is your
That's
time,
awesome.
You know. You
yeah.
want it. You better be ready. And it just happened. I said, well, I have the guy to call, so I'm calling George. And, you know, it just worked out that way.
And that's so wonderful, because now the tide has turned, Everett. Now, because there are those folks that you alluded to earlier that realize that they've shot themselves in the foot, and that all of these wonderfully flavored local contemporary jazz stations across the United States are now gone because, first of all, they wanted to, I haven't said this for a while, but I will since you're on the phone. First of all, they wanted to take the local out of the stations, and that was bad news. That was the kiss of death. Secondly, they wanted their stations to sound more vanilla.
Right.
So, therefore, the soul of what was supposed to be intended in the smooth jazz format was basically gone. So
yeah, well, I'll enhance your statement. The soul that was supposed to be infused in the smooth jazz. Well, see, when that name came about, it was actually devoid of the original soul that existed in the quiet storm of contemporary jazz format. That name pretty much exemplified a totally different type of funky jazz, but it was a different segment's funky jazz, which was not as funky as the true urban funky, like Grover and Ronnie Laws and even, you know, Bob James, who had Richard T and Steve Gadd and all those guys playing with him back then that would keep things really urban. When smooth jazz came about, it was a lighter form of funk, which is what we always said back in L.A. It's like they call it Hollywood beach funk. and that was pretty funny. It was of course derogatory, but, you know, it was an apt description. It was just lighter funk, because I have to be honest, what we heard from radio stations was, well, that's a little too urban
Oh, listen. Yeah. I was working at WSMJ, and I heard that stuff.
Yeah, and we're just kind of going, yeah, but you're trying to get it with this guy. That's what you. But when we do it, it's the authentic. you're telling me it's too urban? That's just really strange, man.
To me, I'm sorry. That's thinly veiled.
Of course.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah, but we're digressing. You know, it had the unfortunate thing about that when you do something that's so limiting and very formulaic like that, you give yourself a lifespan. There's nothing indefinite about it. The wonderful thing that was contemporary jazz or even Quiet Storm at the time when we were younger and listening to this music was that it was always able to evolve with the music that it was based around. And Quiet Storm, when it incorporated contemporary jazz, it incorporated a jazz that sounded like the music that they were playing on R&B stations at night during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So if that music changed, then if those vocal songs changed, those R&B artists changed their style, the contemporary jazz that was being made at that time would change styles with that music because it was influenced by that music.
Yes.
But when you take this music and you base it off of, it's almost like an example of what I tell young people when they start teaching themselves instead of, you know, trying to learn from people that are older than them. When you have young people teaching young people, then there's only so much they can learn. There's a finite end to the knowledge because that the one young person that's teaching the younger person and not learning anymore, there's an extent to his knowledge, and it ends at one point. Well, the same thing with the music. If the music doesn't evolve, then it becomes stagnant.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
And that's what happened. And the music became stagnant. And it wasn't as much the music becoming stagnant. The audience is still out there, and they will still listen to the music because, I mean, basically that's what they do. They listen to music. They'll listen to what's out there. But it became so business-oriented that when the perception of the dollar started seeping away, that's when everybody ran, all the rats jumped off the sinking ship, you know. So
it's
a very interesting scenario.
Oh, it really is, because the whole point was that I know some of these guys, you know some of these guys too, who felt pressured to put out the same music they were putting out 5 years ago in order to keep their jobs and to feed their families. Completely understood. But what they didn't count on, the folks who were running the show, was that people who were buying the music didn't like the music as much because suddenly the honesty was gone in the music. People aren't stupid. They can pick up what's real or what's not real, and that is why people have gravitated. Gosh, in the past 48 hours, Everett, I've put out a couple of videos on my Facebook page, and it's like people are hungry. They're rushing to get to you because you exemplify what can be done courageously when you think out of that box.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, that's absolutely appreciated. I appreciate it. Any accolades I appreciate, but I fail to give myself that much credit.
I know.
I would hesitate because my problem, especially with the younger musicians coming up that say, Everett, man, I listen to you, and that's great. You know, that's great because I'm still learning, and hopefully if they're listening to me, they'll keep learning from me. But I tell them, dude, you want to hear the real stuff, go back and listen to what I'm listening to. You know, and it's people that came way before me. So if you're only listening to, if you don't know who Dexter Gordon is and John Coltrane because they weren't playing funky music, and the mm-hmm. problem with our music now is that people are limiting themselves, the people that are making it, limit themselves to their knowledge only to the stuff that they want to do as opposed to learning at all and incorporating some of that stuff that's not funky, that's straight ahead, and that's jazzy. You can infuse that into anything you do, but they
that's
don't
right.
believe that. They don't want to know that. They just want to know enough. I find a lot of these kids just want to know enough to make a record, get on stage and dance around and be popular. And it was never my intent to be popular. It was never my intent.
I believe it.
That was not, from the beginning when I started playing music, I never said I want to be famous. I know more kids now that just want to be famous. Even my daughter was one of them. I want to be famous. That's one of the first words that came out of her mouth. I said, why? But I never wanted to be famous. And to this day, I still eschew fame. I run and hide from it. It's not what I want to do. I know it comes with the territory. And if it is, I mean, there are positives that can come from it. But I like being a normal guy that walks across the street and takes the trash out, you know, and the neighbor says, hey, F, hey, dude, how you doing? You know, none of my friends are musicians that I hang out with. You know, my musician friends, I see them when we work and we hang out. But where I live, my friends are, you know, policemen, guys that own plumbing companies, you know, tire guys. You know, those are my friends I see every day at the gym. So it's a normal. I'm a normal guy, and I never want to think where a lot of these kids just want to be famous and get on stage and be adored. And it was just never part of my makeup to be adored. It was just never. I love the fact that people love the music that God's given me the ability to do. And that I appreciate more than anything. And I praise God for that. And when they're saying, Everett, your music touches me, that means something to me only because it means that God's hand has done something through me. And
beautiful.
And that I can appreciate. But my father infused a huge amount of modesty in me to where being praised and adored is just not something I'm really comfortable with. So the reason I got into this is just to play music is because of what I do.
And
I rambled. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. It's beautiful, and it reminds me of a conversation I had at the Cap Jazz Fest with Kirk Whalum, because he was talking about his nephew, Kenneth. And it's funny, Everett, because this is what Kirk said publicly and privately. He said, my nephew has already surpassed me in playing, and here's why. Because Kirk said, when I started out, I didn't have the right intent on what I saw as far as the road ahead of me is concerned. Kenneth has a perspective that he got from his dad, preacher. Kenneth is absolutely serene in the knowledge that he has a gift and he needs to play music. Kirk said, here's a young man in his 20s, and he said, when I was that age, I was thinking of fame, I was thinking of the women, I was thinking of the whole rock and roll vibe. Yes, Kirk said that.
That's really odd, because I've known Kirk since I was 14, and I was around him often.
That's
and
what
here's
he said.
Here's a guy that practiced and still practices hours a day. I mean, and by far, of our generation, one of the most influential facts of our generation.
Sure.
If not the most influential. And he could, to me at that time especially, I remember Kenny G coming into a club in Houston where Kirk was playing, and Kenny G was and is still a wonderful player. He was a great player, and they were on stage. Kenny came in and sat in with Kirk, and Kirk just wham.
Mopped up the floor, didn't he?
I mean, he just, you know, brought out the paddle and just starts spanking people, because that's what he does. I mean, that's what he can do. Kirk, I mean, if you get, you know, but it wasn't malicious. Kirk, I mean, in Texas when we did it, we loved people to come and play. But when you stepped on the stage, it wasn't like we were going to pull back. It was like, we're playing. Bring it. Come on.
Exactly.
Play.
Right.
And it wasn't like, I'm going to show you up. It's like, man, throw down. I want you to impress me, because I want to learn from you. I want to look at you and go, yeah. And that's what we looked at back in the day. And Kirk, I could see Kirk's eyes going, come on, yeah. And Kenny was playing his butt off. And Kenny was playing his butt off, hands down. He just killed it. But Kirk had such a unique style that all of us in that area, in that market, who listened to him during that time, I've always said this. I don't care how many notes anybody plays. I'm a old bebopper, and I play a lot of notes at times. Kirk is one of the very few people, if not the only person, that can play one note and make me cry.
Wow.
And so when he says that his nephew has surpassed him,
yes,
I understand where Kirk is coming from, and his nephew is an excellent, excellent musician. But, you know, you have to understand his nephew still has to find himself. He sounds a little bit like Kirk, and he'll need to find himself. And that'll come in time, like all of us have to find ourselves. But Kirk is one of the most, if not the only, about the biggest influential sax player in my generation. And you can tell him I said that. And with the kids out there, it's between Kirk and Gerald. They're the two biggest influential sax players in our generation. But as far as I'm concerned, because of where I came from and I grew up around him, Kirk is probably the most influential.
Well, I think that Kirk probably said that, and you can appreciate this. Not knowing Kirk as much as some other folks who are in my capacity, I will say that having spent time with him, he appreciates his nephew's fearlessness. That the whole CD exemplifies a new edge, a respect of the past, reverence for the past, and plowing ahead to the future. I mean, that track with Common on Kenneth's CD is just nuts, because you see the future of jazz. And as a matter of fact, I said to him that day in this packed little place at Cap Jazz, what is the future of jazz? And he said, Kenneth Whalum III. It's a trip.
Well,
yeah.
It really depends on where you want to go. Because jazz should always be varietous. It should always have, there's not one direction that jazz should be in.
That's right.
Smooth jazz never should have just been a singular form, a singular style. If you want to have a category contemporary jazz, it should have been like it was back in the late 70s, 80s, where, the songs that are in smooth jazz would, I'd say, relatively speaking back then, would be songs like Feel So Good, Theme from Taxi. Those are easy accessible songs for the public to get. But still having something solid to say. I think the smooth jazz as it existed over the last 10 years absolutely has a place, but it never should have just been that. It should have been woven in with other styles and people that were being aggressive at times, and you pull back and you give them some of the lighter fare.
Completely agree.
It never should have been a whole format by itself. That's why it appears to have died to the extent that it did. Because when you have a whole format like that, then, of course, there became a plethora of musicians who became artists. And the one thing I've always said, and this would be inclusive of myself, I was very fortunate that George Duke offered me a record deal. I don't believe that every musician out there should be an artist. Some of us are backup people. Some of us are not at the technical point where we should be artists. Some of us, I mean, when I say technical, it doesn't have to mean that you have to be so technically proficient, but we're not at the point where we're saying enough different to be an artist. When you have a lot of the sameness, then the redundancy kind of negates the fact that there's artistry involved. There's no artistry when there's that much redundancy.
That is one of the more humble things I have ever heard somebody say on the show or anywhere. Oh, my God. Look, what you are able to do, I'm just going to get right in your face here and say this, what you are able to do with a saxophone is so tender. You might not be aware of the tenderness that I feel. I mean, I'm listening to Central Park West, and I'm crying, just like you cry when you hear one note from Kirk. You have a way of putting all of what you've learned, you know, being in your dad's church, being around your family, getting infused with what Texas had to offer when you were growing up and getting involved in your local bands after North Texas State, all of that comes into play. You, it's more than the technique with you, because some people are solely into technique and they don't have the kind of soul that you do.
Right. Well, you know what? I do feel I have a place. I'm very critical of what I do, and I think, oh God, that just sucked. That just sucked. But my point really was when it, not everybody. I mean, because everyone could have a small studio at home and make recordings and put out records and sell them at the local club, everyone became an artist. Well, not everyone is an artist. Some people are meant to support artists. And some of us are meant to just be really good musicians or great musicians. You know, not everybody in the 70s was an artist. There were wonderful bands that backed up artists or that played in like Confunction, Brass Construction, you know, a bunch of bands. Not all of those people were artists. They supported, they were great musicians who supported, even the Funk Brothers. They made great records, but they were not artists. They were great studio musicians who supported artists. They were great musicians who supported artists in clubs out and doing gigs. And that's what unfortunately, that's what our industry has allotted for now with the kind of mediocrity in the music. Everyone can do it. Everyone feels they can do it. And quite literally, the type of music that was being produced, everyone could do it. So why not? Why not have everybody be an artist? But that all goes back to the everybody wanting to be famous.
Yeah.
There are some people that just never wanted to be famous. We just want to play great music. And when I was growing up, fame never entered my mind. I just never even thought about it. All I thought was, hey, if I put that horn in my mouth, I feel good. I feel really good when what comes out. It's like, wow, this is magic. And I don't know that people are thinking that. They put the instrument in their mouth and they get on stage and they say, adore me.
Oh, that's so sad because, you know.
Oh, I'm not saying everybody's doing it. I'm just saying I
know.
It just seems like a preponderance of thought.
Yeah.
You know, adore me as opposed to, man, I feel this is fun. This is good. This is why I do this. And that's why First Love came about. Seriously, to come full circle, that's why it came about. Because that's why I played the music. In the beginning, it was never for fame. And this record itself is huge fame. It's anti-smooth jazz.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
It pretty much said everything I said, everything I'm saying. It said, don't play me, is what it did, you know. So to the smooth jazz genre it did. But it wasn't a stab at you know, turn my nose up at it. It was, I gotta do what makes me happy. And I'm just really fortunate and blessed that I was allowed to do it. Yeah, of course, always there are going to be things I would want to change. I wish I could have played better. But
well,
as far as everyone else's involvement, it was just a wonderful situation to be involved in and be a part of.
Well, you know this, I'm going to let you go soon because I know you got to do your thing at Blues Alley tonight, and I'm so tickled that you spent this much time. But, you know, when you get to the point, Everett, I really want you to consider this. When you, you know, understand this conversation that we had and realize that the impact that you have made it is so large, and you probably are going to walk that fence for a while on thinking, I want to be a regular guy, I don't want to be a star, but then again, I've got so many people who really, really appreciate me. All of those people, when you moved to L.A. in the late 80s, and all those people who gravitated to you, Tina Marie and Anita Baker and Kenny Loggins, you were so important to Kenny Loggins and Sheena Easton and George and Marcus Miller. I could go on and on. but they saw something in you that was so special. And I always want you to understand how the particular way you play is always going to be a big difference for folks who have been fans, who are fans, and who will remain so because it's you playing.
Well, no, I appreciate it. And I do understand that. The one thing that I've never been able to, the one word I've never been able to use is fans. I call them friends or supporters of the music that I do. I don't believe in fan. Fanatic, you know, the longer version of the word, it's just not something I've ever bought into for myself. The modesty doesn't allow for it. But I do appreciate it, and I just like the fact that at the end of the day, I've been given a lot of opportunities to be in situations that I have to pinch myself and just say, wow, this is so cool. This is, wow. There was a point at age 35, if I had died at age 35, my life would still have been complete.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been complete.
My gosh. And here's an example. I've got to toss that out. 1993, the inauguration of Bill Clinton, he borrows a sax from you.
Right.
I love that.
It's that simple. So, I mean, everything after a certain point was just gravy.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I had pinched myself. So then the reality set in. And as we get older, then you start saying, okay, what else is there? And then you start, when life starts changing, when you turn 50, by that time, if you haven't lost a parent, you're probably taking care of one.
Yeah.
And helping to take care of one, or looking out for one, and life starts to become a bit different. And it's not that it has to be somber or dark. It's just what life is, and it can consume you. The negative aspect can consume you if you let it. So that's why what you said earlier definitely has weight. We should definitely pray for not only George, but a lot of us who have lost people, that we love, and people that are taking care of loved ones who are ill at this point or maybe close to making the transition. We should always reach out, and we should always be praying for those people, because it's a very dark place and it can be all-consuming.
Yes.
And we need those prayers to bring us out and realize the truth and what's really happening with the transition. And if that brings us comfort, then it's all the better for it.
That's very, I couldn't think of anything better for you to say than what you just did. I appreciate that, and a lot of people are going to appreciate that when they listen to this show in archive mode. God bless
you. Thank you for the time as well. God bless you.
Oh my gosh. Wonderful. You know what? I'm going to leave you, and I'm going to let you go, but I'm going to play, because I'm so intrigued, just a little blurb of the Council of Nicaea. Love that song.
Wow. Okay. I like it too. See, that's what I like, aggressive programming.
Oh, yes. Oh, look, well, hybrid jazz lends itself to this. Are you kidding? Everything gets played on this show. So this is not the title that would lend itself to a smooth jazz station, and that's why I want to play it. So why did you include that on the CD?
Because we could.
There you go.
It was that type of song. It was it's not in typical 4-4, like 4-4, how you would dance. It's in 7-4, 1-2-3-4-5-6-7, 1-2-3-4-5-6-7-1. And it's not something typical that you hear. I just started playing in that meter. We call that time signature meter, music talk. And a friend of mine, Mark Stevens, brought that song to me. And I loved it. And I said, yeah, I want to do it. And I took it to George. He said, absolutely, we need to do this song. And it was really, really cool to do, because I'd never recorded a song in 7. I've done 3, like a waltz, but I've never done a song in 7. And
awesome.
It was a lot of fun.
That's great. Everett, have a great show tonight. If I can get it together, I'll see you there at Blues Alley. You're going to have a packed house.
So.
You better get ready.
I hope so.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you for having me on, and God bless.
God bless you too, Everett. Thanks for spending so much time.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Everett Harp, God love him. I really appreciate the time he spent. He is amazing, and I wasn't sure that we were going to have him on the show today because when you're good friends with somebody and that somebody who is a great friend loses the love of his life, that's pretty tough. And here Everett's got to do a show tonight, and I am sure he would love nothing better than to be in California with George Duke right now, but he's got to do what he's got to do too. So let's play this song for you. This is just one of those thoughtful, amazing songs that's on First Love from Everett Harp, The Council of Nicaea, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. right like that. Oh, my goodness. Jonathan Butler, who was having the time of his life in 2007 when he did that CD, Live in South Africa. He had been planning to come back home for so long, and when he exploded with Africa in that initial song on the CD, Live in South Africa, you just know that he was feeling the joy. Oh, it was so beautiful. Look, you know what? I'll tell you the truth. I put together this show and didn't know some things at the time when I was putting together the show. One of them is this. Jonathan Butler is going to be in this region tomorrow night. I'm so tickled about this. I'm figuring out, all right, how am I going to do this? He's going to be in Bethesda, Maryland at the Strathmore. If you've heard about his Soul of Summer tour with Warren Hill and Mesa, that's a pretty dangerous combination there. Lovely. Jonathan will be in the vicinity tomorrow night. He is touring all over the place. His new CD, Grace and Mercy, is dropping on the 25th of September. A lot is going on with Jonathan Butler, and I am sure he celebrated, as did we all, when Nelson Mandela turned 94 yesterday. A lot of the songs that you're going to hear today are especially for Madiba, which is actually Papa, what folks have been calling Nelson Mandela for such a long time. For him to have endured what he has endured in his life and to turn 94, the face of serenity is just mind-boggling. God bless him. George Duke, that was the second song we heard from Deja Vu. What goes around comes around. Now, I wanted to play that song. That's the song that you hear when you go to George, his website. And I remembered what Kirk Whalum had said to me. He said a lot of things to me that day at Capital Jazz, but he was talking about George coming into the project Gospel According to Jazz 3. You're going to hear a track from that a little bit later on. And wasn't sure where George was where he was at as far as spiritual matters were concerned. So having seen George Duke that night at Reed Temple in Maryland for that big recorded event, I can tell you that George was affected profoundly spiritually that night. Where he has been since the time he left until now is a different story, because his wife, Corinne, just passed away. She had been sick for a while. He thought he was going to lose her a time before or two. And he was greatly, greatly relieved that he didn't lose her. But this time around, she went to be with the Lord. Kirk said to me that day that Corinne was a strong woman of faith. So that greatly comforts me. And I'm hoping that it comforts George, because he needs that a lot. What goes around comes around. In the best sense of the word, I'm thinking about that now, because her goodness will affect so many people for so long. You will see that. George, at this writing, I'm not sure how the story is going to change now, but he was supposed to be with Jean-Luc Ponty for the Brothers of Invention, August the 2nd date, for the Zappanal Festival in Germany, a festival dedicated to the memory of Frank Zappa. Alice Cooper will also be there, so I'm looking forward to hearing about what transpires in Germany. And this is so cool, I have to pass this along. The gentleman who organized this festival, this has been a few years now, wanted to do something as they were living in East Berlin, and they could not support Frank Zappa at that time. He was considered a threat to the government, and actually they had files on people who were Frank Zappa fans. Seriously. So when the Berlin Wall fell, they were free to admire, to support, to encourage others to do the same regarding Frank Zappa. So Zappanal Festival was created, and it's quite close to where the Berlin Wall was taken down. Beautiful little story. In regard to George, so far, cross your fingers. He will be doing the George Duke Trio with Al Jarreau coming up very soon, and Wolf Trap will be part of that August schedule. So keep praying for him. He had been in the studio in July, so at least he wasn't touring and had to come off the road. At least he could be with his wife. God bless him. Everett Harp, God bless you for spending as much time as you did going through changes we heard at the very top of last hour, and then the chronicles of I'm just back in my Catholic trip. Look, I have to tell you, that was one of the things we heard, the Council of Nicaea back in the Catholic Church days when I was going to school, Immaculate Conception, St. Hilary, Bishop McDevitt. That's what we heard, what was happening at the Council of Nicaea. It's a Pope thing. But anyway, Everett just did such a masterful job on that album, by the way, First Love, produced by George Duke. And, of course, you can hear him resolutely in that particular track and in a lot of other tracks. Lenny Castro on percussion, Michael Patches Stewart on trumpet, Reggie Young on trombone, James Genus on bass, Mark Ellis Stevens, also Dwight Sills, our good friend, on guitar. Now, that track, What Goes Around, from George Duke, Michael Manson was on bass, and Everett Harp was playing saxophone. So you don't necessarily know these things as you're going into a show, but there they are. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thanks so much to all the folks who have joined us today. Let's play another song just to make sure we celebrate something today, and that is Nelson Mandela and his 94th birthday week. It's not going to be just one day. Are you kidding me? Regina Carter here from her glorious Reverse Thread CD, honoring African culture and songs with contemporary music and incorporating some ancient pieces of instrumentation as well. This is Daydreaming on the Niger. Enjoy.
você. Abandonado, alô, 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 sou eu. Morrendo de saudade de você. Quero dizer, quero dizer que não posso mais sofrer. You are free, fui castigado. Assim é que não pode ser. Longe de você, abandonado. Pelas suas necessidades, preciso de saudade. Eu não perdi tudo por tom. Agora apenas tudo foi. Eu sempre cantei nessa dor. Começou, alô, 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 sou eu. Morrendo de saudade de você. Quero dizer que eu não posso mais sofrer. Que eu errei, fui castigado. Assim é que não pode ser. Longe de você, abandonado. Longe de você, abandonado. Longe de você, abandonado. Longe de você, abandonado. Longe de você, abandonado.
Just a sweet little ditty from the Lost and Found, Gretchen Parlato providing her own percussion. Thank you very much. It's amazing what that woman does with her voice and her hands when she's on stage. No kidding. She is a one-woman show. Alô, alô, from Paulina de Viola from Brazil. Gretchen showing her love of Brazilian music. Oh, does she ever? She not only appreciates, she lives it. Lord, is she good. Mercy, mercy, mercy. I just found out that Taylor, I knew I was going to forget this, Taylor Eichste, who plays piano for Gretchen quite a bit, and certainly on the Lost and Found, Taylor's name was a little tricky because it's spelled E-I-G-S-T-I. I'm trying to remember the name of the actor that he looks just like enough to be his brother. Who was the blonde guy that gets all the women in Hollywood, the actor in The Hangover? Tell me his name. He was engaged a few times to a couple of different women, including maybe Jennifer Aniston. I think he broke her heart. Who didn't? but also he was married at one time to the girl who plays the partner of Danny on Blue Bloods on Friday night. I know you're going to find out for me, and I know I'm going to see his name momentarily. But anyway, that's been on my mind. Derek Hodge on bass, Kendrick Scott on drums, Alan Hampton on guitar, Dana Stevens on tenor sax on that glorious, critically acclaimed CD, The Lost and Found, co-produced by Robert Glasper. Now, if you go to Gretchen Parlato's website, you're going to find out a whole bunch of things, including where she's going to be. Newport Jazz Festival on August the 5th, among many. But you're also going to see what somebody from All About Jazz said about Gretchen Parlato. This is big. This critic said, just like 75 years ago, you knew that nobody sounded like Billie Holiday. Ain't nobody sounds like Gretchen Parlato. And that is the truth, especially when you hear a song like that. $1.50, a minute, 50 seconds for that song. Allo, allo. Beautiful. Dr. Yusef Lateef, right before Gretchen. Nubian Lady from Gentle Giant, a song that Kenny Barron wrote in his 20s. Kenny Barron was 29 in 1972. He's 69 now, and Dr. Lateef will be 92 this year. Amazing. When you go to Dr. Lateef's website, you are going to trip out because there are descriptions of his availability on the site. He has everything from, you know, discussions about his music. He has a trio that he can do or a quintet. There are about eight different ways that you can hire Dr. Lateef for your next enterprise. It's amazing. 92 years young. Regina Carter, the violinist who has done so much in her career. Daydreaming on the Niger is what we heard from Reverse Thread. African folk melodies with contemporary interpretation, and the kora, which is a West African harp incorporated into the mix, and accordion. Just did not know this either when I put Regina into this mix. Tonight, she is going to be at the New Mexico Jazz Festival in Santa Fe. Couldn't imagine a more glorious scenario than to be in Albuquerque or Santa Fe to see the lineup of jazz folks that they have at this festival. It is amazing. And Regina and her Reverse Thread group are going to be playing tonight. So, Regina, if you somehow manage to hear this, God bless you. Hopefully you'll be on the show soon. Oh, my gracious, it's going to be a good time. And that will be going on until this festival, the 25th. Robbie Coltrane's going to be part of the lineup as well. To continue with just an homage to Nelson Mandela, I thought I'd dip back into a friend of ours. We haven't heard from Sheikh Ndoye for a while. Had a little conversation with him in the backfield on Facebook today. Didn't know that his wife is expecting a baby. Oh, I'm so excited. One of the most amazing men on bass ever. This is a gentleman from Senegal. Learned what he learned about jazz on the radio in his country. And just took all of that world, that folk, that American stuff he heard, put it into his sweet little head and his soul, and it came out like this. Breathtaking title track from his Child's Tale CD from a few years ago. Sheikh Ndoye on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. You'll enjoy this. Thank you.
Wild dogs cry out in the night as they grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right, sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.
And there they go, down that Toto 4 highway. Well, why do you think we call it hybrid jazz, huh? Toto right there, and a song that seemed to fit right in. Two songs today called Africa, the first from Jonathan Butler, and then this one from 1982. Just in case you never heard the story, I just love this. Here was David Paich looking at a documentary on TV about Africa, and he was appalled and moved and felt really strongly about the images that he saw. So he really did reflect on this precious little thing that he was. He thought, you know what, here I am, a white kid. Can I necessarily relate? I feel so deeply. I want to do something. And he just had this storyline in mind of the images and the poetry and the beauty and all of it, all of what he saw that affected him so deeply when he saw the show on Africa. And if you ever saw the video with Toto, that's David in the lead role. It was cheesy, especially, you know, when you compare it in contrast to what's happening in the way of high-tech videos, but it was heartfelt, and you can just feel that, can't you? Bless him. Jeff Porcaro tried to explain the whole synopsis of the storyline, and we lost Jeff, of course, in 1992. But my golly, whenever there has been a Toto concert through the years, that song always gets played. Toto cannot leave the stage without that song getting played. Just felt it. Felt that song yesterday when I saw Nelson Mandela's face. I did. Tony Bunn, we heard Marika's Delight from the amazing Little Mini Disc. Small World that was out a couple of years ago. Had to play something from Tony Bunn on bass because today marks 8 months on Earth for Princess Nikki. I love to tell this story that Tony, being 54, never had any children. He was never a dad. And surprise, 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 here comes Nikki on Earth. And when you see pictures of this little girl, she is amazing looking. You can just tell that there's got to be some royalty in her blood. You can tell that she is going to be both trouble and triumphant when she gets older. An amazing face. And just to show you how small of a world it really is, I hadn't thought about this until this very second. As is the case so often, there are pictures that I post on Facebook just so people can get a taste, including me, of taking a mini vacation. Pictures from bedrooms to bathrooms to houses, different parts of the world, Costa Rica, California, found a place that was amazing, spellbinding, that was in southern Sweden. As it turns out, Tony Bunn saw this picture and said, "That looks very familiar to a place that I saw when I was visiting my friend Peter Lund, who lives, I think, in that neighborhood." Sure enough, the picture I found, this amazing waterfront mansion with windows. The sun comes in, it just makes everything a rainbow color inside the dining room. Peter Lund, Tony Bunn's friend, lives just around the block from the house. How small of a world is that, huh? Staggers the mind. Shake and Doy, C-H-E-I-K-H, N as in Nancy, D as in dog, O-Y-E.com. Go find out about this bassist, composer, arranger, born in Senegal, heard the radio as a child, loved jazz, still does. Amazing things he's doing this year, being part of the Coltrane Festival in High Point, North Carolina on the 1st of September. Also, Dauphin County Jazz in Harrisburg coming up. Touring with Arshak Saranyan, a good friend of Tony Bunn's, by the way. Arshak is doing a tour in Russia later on this year. Shake is going to be visiting us in later August, and his wife will have given birth to their child at that time. He's going to be telling us about new music. But right now, what you need to understand is that you heard something from a child's tale. And I'm trying to find information on there because you really need to know. I'm bending down. Hold on. I actually did this. I wasn't supposed to because all the blood rushes to your head. But on this particular track, just so you know, the people that wanted to play with Shake on this, amazing folks. On this album, Randy Brecker, also Eric Marienthal, some of the top players in the D.C. area, Russell Ferrante. Vocals on that particular track, Sananda Kishore and Adrian Green, who we all know and love around the area. On bass, you just heard two of the best back-to-back, Tony Bunn and Shake and Doy. And there's more music on the way, including another track from Everett Hart. We can't say enough of how much we appreciate the time that he took to spend with us today. Everett at Blues Alley tonight. If you want to see a guy who understands the terminology of hybrid jazz, right there. Straight ahead, contemporary, fused, funky. Incorporates all of the elements he learned, gospel and soul and jazz, all of that, and he doesn't want to shy away from any of it. And I thank God that he feels that way. We had a great reveal as far as what he feels about jazz these days, and I'm really appreciative of that. How many places can you go to that you're going to hear Toto back-to-back with John Coltrane, huh? Well, you're going to hear that right now. One of the songs that completely turned jazz on its ear. Everybody knew the song, but nobody ever heard it the way John Coltrane did. Changing from bebop to modal, setting jazz back and forward at the same time. Holy cow. Folks who were used to hearing him a certain way were in a state of shock. The folks who knew that he had to be liberated were going, thank you, Jesus. This is John Coltrane, My Favorite Things, from 1961. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Was that not an amazing piece of work? And I'm seeing a phone number that popped up on screen, and I don't want 615, I'm sorry, to go away. So I just wanted to make sure I touch base with you a little bit, because that was 13 minutes at 45 seconds worth of John Coltrane and my favorite things. I'm so curious because I wasn't expecting any call, so I have no idea who this is. I can't get to the phone while the song is playing, because once I activate the microphone, we're on the show. So your guess is as good as mine as to who this is. Hello, 615, you're on the show. Hello? Hello?
Hello, how are you?
Hi, who is this?
This is Greg from Nashville.
Hi, Greg. I'm glad that you called. I don't usually get calls, and I saw 615, and I went, okay, that's my old stomping grounds, Nashville, so I'm just going to go for it.
Oh, well, I got the blues, and I broke my leg, and I just happened to come across your show, and I wanted to listen in.
Well, fabulous. Thank you. You broke your leg?
Yeah, I broke a part of the femur where the knee joint is.
Oh, my gosh, you poor thing. There's pain involved in that, I'm sure.
Yeah, a lot, but this is my second time around, so I'm kind of used to it.
Oh, my God. Well, cool. What part of 615 do you live in? What neighborhood in Nashville?
I live in Germantown, right downtown.
Okay. I'm a little familiar with Germantown. I lived in a couple of different places, actually twice in the Nashville region in the past 20 years, so I was real curious. I appreciate you calling. You're going to hang out for the rest of the show until 4 o'clock Eastern time?
Yeah, I'm going to hang out with you guys all day until you kick me out.
Okay. Well, you only have less than an hour now, so thanks for calling and checking in, and we'll say a prayer that you feel better real quick.
Okay, I look forward to following your show.
All right, Greg, thank you so much for calling. That's a real nice treat.
All right, thank you.
All right. I will. I'm going to keep playing stuff right now, as a matter of fact. I'm going to play something, and we're going to talk about that song, My Favorite Things. But I wanted to make note of this, that, man, I'm so proud of Everett for saying what he said today. But in regard to first love, there is a song, if you are a John Coltrane fan, then you know this song. This is Everett's version of Central Park West, and I want you to just like immerse yourself in this song and feel it and be grateful as I am for the gift that Everett Harp has, because there is a certain way that he plays that is tender and sure and is knowledgeable about what the intent of the song was. Check this out on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you. forget them, let's not shed loose. So the Bible said, and it still is new. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Yes, the strong gets more, while the weak ones fade. Empty pockets don't ever make the grave. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own.
One of the best songs ever, actually, a Grammy Hall of Fame award winner, although it didn't need the Grammys to sanction that it was the coolest song ever, 1976, and then Song of the Century from the RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, and the National Endowment of the Arts. Song of the Century. Well, one of them anyway, but that's, you know what? It's so amazing to me that an argument about money with her mother turned such an anger-based thought into a song that so many people related to through the years. Billie Holiday. Billie wrote that song along with Arthur Herzog back in 1939, God Bless the Child, and had to play something by Billie Holiday, had to play something by John Coltrane, and I'll tell you why in just a second. Whew, man, that's such a heavy thought, and put something on my Facebook page the other day from Gil Scott-Heron, because I hadn't heard that song, Lady Day and John Coltrane, for a while. Man, that's killer. Woo! You need to hear that song. But anyway, we heard Everett Harp as well, Central Park West, one of those Coltrane songs that Everett gravitated to and put on his First Love CD. Just so amazing. Oh, man. There's a couple of things that need to get done tonight, and Everett Harp is at Blues Alley. If you are within the sound of my voice and you can get to Washington, D.C., you are going to hear not only an artist of consummate talent, but you're going to be hearing a guy who's going to be letting a lot of stuff out. You can just tell he needs to get all of this out, and he really loves to play that sax. He's so proficient, you know, no matter what kind of sax it is. And I don't know what folks need to expect tonight, but I hope that place is sold out. Blues Alley, bluesalley.com if you want more information. But if you get a chance, go. I'm committed elsewhere, and I'm just tearing my hair out, but I have got to see him in this new mindset that he's in. Oh, I love it. And now that things are cemented in a new way with George Duke, there's going to be some new closeness that Everett and George have because of George Duke's wife, Corinne, who just passed away. It's just so hard to believe to even say the words. But there's going to be some new things happening. You can just tell with Everett Harp, so we'll keep you posted on them. To start the set, it was John Coltrane. Man, my favorite things, his seventh album, first for Train on soprano sax. Miles Davis, a year or so before, this is 1961 now, Miles had gone to Europe and had bought a soprano sax for Coltrane. Not a whole lot of people were delving into soprano at that point. So he brought it back for Train. John's intrigued. Played some summer gigs, and then John Coltrane leaves Miles Davis but takes the sax with him. And mercy, he just went with it. At this particular point, he had crossed over from bebop to modal. His growing Indian influence was really showing. That Sound of Music song, My Favorite Things, was done in a way that left folks completely baffled, stunned, astounded, delighted, thrilled, pissed, whatever. He just needed to express himself. And here's McCoy Tyner saying, bring it on. McCoy's on piano, Steve Davis on bass, Elvin Jones on drums. Just amazing. So I had to play John Coltrane and Billie Holiday because it's just hard to conceive. They both passed away on July 17th, different years. Billie in 1959, John in 1967. I think that's so fascinating. And doggone if our good buddy Gil Scott-Heron didn't pick up on that, had to, because he was just smarter than the average bear. So much wisdom. Gil Scott, oh, at least he got to be 62. Billy died at 44. John passed at 40. You just have to think about these things because 2012, come on, I've said this before, I'll say it again. In July, I'll tell you the absolute truth. July has been in my family. Doesn't mean it's going to continue to be that way. But we always went to the beach, to Ocean City, New Jersey. When we went there on vacation every July, invariably, somebody got sick or somebody passed away. July. Don't know what it is. My father, July 5th, 1979, a couple of months after I got married. So July, I tread lightly. But you have to get it out, you know. You have to balance the positive and the negative. We're all very positive that we're all going to live a long time. But in the meantime, live as though today were your last day. With every good intention, every good thing that God has intended for you, all good things, because we just don't know what His plan is. And that's all I'm going to say. All right. Let's move on, shall we? Earl Clue and Bob James. Let's just do this. One of those fabulous songs from one of the most astounding CDs ever. Yes. One on One from 1979, Mallorca. Let your mind go on vacation here on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
depth, weak strength. Cash a check, change your sex. Day to night, dark to light. Hard to fall, on the off. Push to shove, hate to love. In and out, it's all about transformation. Wet to dry, born to die. Yin or yang, pleasure or pain. Good to bad, crazy or sane. Hey, you make the rules, you got to play the game. Fist the glove, lose the win. You live a life of sin, then you're born again. Trash to art, heart to heart. Oh, big or small, we're all of us the same. Just transformation.
Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
I can't tell you how many letters I get from Nigeria and Kenya and Botswana and South Africa and all over the continent. They have been blessed by these these CDs and DVD, and we wanted to bless them back. So this is a song called Africa, Jesus, Africa.
Africa, Jesus, Africa. Jesus, Africa, Jesus. Africa, Jesus, Africa. Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
Come on.
Africa, Jesus, Africa.
Come on, man, you think.
Jesus, Africa, Jesus. Africa, Jesus, Africa. Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
Come on.
Africa. Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
Come on. What they're saying is
Africa, Jesus, Africa.
Jesus, Africa, Jesus. Come on.
Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
I can't hear you. Africa, Jesus. Come on.
Africa, Jesus, Africa.
Come on. Over here. Jesus.
Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
Over here. Come on. Africa.
Africa, Jesus, Africa.
Up top. Come on.
Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
I see. Everybody in the building. Come on.
Africa, Jesus, Africa.
Say it like you mean it. I want to feel it. Come on. Jesus.
Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
Say it like you mean it, y'all. Come on. Africa.
Africa, Jesus, Africa.
That's what I'm talking about. Jesus.
Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
Come on. All together.
Africa, Jesus, Africa. Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
We need you, Jesus. Y'all keep going. Ladies, say this with me.
Africa, Jesus,
ladies.
Africa.
We need you, Jesus. Ladies, come on.
Jesus, Africa,
louder,
Jesus.
Louder, come on. Fellas.
Africa, Jesus, Africa.
Fellas. Africa. There.
Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
Y'all sound so good, ladies, come on.
Africa, Jesus, Africa.
We need you, Jesus.
Jesus, Africa, Jesus.
Y'all are such a blessing. I love y'all.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Caleb the Bridge, ladies and gentlemen.
Just amazing stuff. Woo! Being there, I was just catapulted back in time to when that was recorded in Glendale, Maryland at the Reed Temple. Gospel According to Jazz, Part 3. Woo! Africa, Jesus. Africa. Oh, my God. One of my favorite songs from that whole night. George Duke on his keyboard there. Oh, bless his heart. You know what? We've never gone through. We've played a few tracks from the Gospel According to Jazz, Chapter 3, but have never gone through the gamut of who all was part of that brilliance, that anointing that night. Of course, the Whalum family was kicking in gear. Cortland Whalum on background vocals, Lenny Castro on percussion, Sean McCurley on drums, Kyle Whalum on electric bass, Reginald Veal upright bass, Jerry Peters on organ, George Duke on keyboard, Aaron Broadus trumpet and background vocals, trumpet and horns, Antonio Hudson, Paul McKinney doing his thing also on trumpet. Kenneth Whalum III, mercy, tenor saxophone. He is just amazing. Caleb the Bridge doing his spoken word. John Stoddard on vocals, keyboards, and background vocals. Hugh Peanuts Whalum on vocals, tenor sax, and piano. And, of course, the Grandmaster, Kirk, on flute and soprano sax and tenor sax. Oh, my gosh. Just really, really amazing, and so appreciative of what that brother does as far as music is concerned. Merciful. Merciful God is. Woohoo! I have 90 seconds left to wrap it up and to tell you that we did hear, by the way, we heard Nona Hendrix from the Mosaic Project. Nona Hendrix, 68 this year, once part of a girl group called the Ordettes in 1962. I sold my heart to the junk man. That became Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, along with Sarah Dash and Cindy Birdsong. And you know about Cindy Birdsong going to the Supremes. And my God, Nona Hendrix got together with Terry Lynn Carrington. The rest is history. There's so much history of Nona Hendrix. It's just amazing. Cindy Bradley, we heard, she's going to be here on August the 2nd. It's going to be a big day. You heard from her unscripted CD, Footprints, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Thanks to all of our guests today that stopped by. Thanks to Everett Harp. Go see him at Blues Alley. And have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you on Tuesday with Chris McNulty and Freddie Redd.